Our guest today is a comedy legend, a guy who started out as a stand-up comedian, worked his way into some TV gigs, got himself a couple of slots on the Smothers Brothers show, performed a skit that may have been responsible for that show being canceled, then went on to doing his own show at one point and many others, and did 140 appearances with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. He has directed a few movies. He's done more than 300 commercials. He's won Emmys. He's won Clios. He was once bumped off the cover of Newsweek magazine by Richard Nixon. And he has had a third career, if you will, as a sitcom director, directing a huge number of episodes of things like Curb Your Enthusiasm and Weeds, Mad About You, Friends, Designing Women, Seinfeld, Newhart, It's Gary Shandling Show, and The Golden Girls, to name just a few. His name is David Steinberg, and he now is back with the second season of a Showtime series called Inside Comedy, where he sits down and talks to other comedy professionals about their lives in the business. And I'm so happy to have him on the show. David, welcome to KTRS.
Hi, Paul. Just listening to that intro, if you know, when I was younger, if I would have known I could have done an eighth of that, I would have been so more relaxed about it.
You know, when I write an intro for somebody, I usually list two or three things they've done. I actually could have got on a lot longer for you. It's a very impressive resume.
Yes, my only plan was to say yes to everything. So I never said no, and I was always interested in directing. I'm amazed when I hear that, this very frank. Truly amazing. I'm not a falsely modest person, but that's incredible.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the things on that list. I mentioned your directing career. One of the things that you did for a long time was direct episodes of Bob Newhart's show. Not the Bob Newhart show, but Newhart, right?
Yes. The second series of that Bob had.
The one set in Vermont. How do you direct? Look at that! I'm stammering because we're talking about the man. How do you direct Bob Newhart?
Well, you know, you don't have to do much, really. Bob knows exactly what he's doing, and especially at that point, he knew what he was doing. I'll tell you what I remembered. What I remember most about the show. I remember the lunches that we used to have, because about an hour before lunch, Bob would say to me, you know, and we were at a lot in California called the Radford lot. It was very small and sort of an intimate lot, as opposed to how most, you know, studio lots are so big and you can't even find each other. This was a small one, and we had a very little commissary where we would have lunch. And he said, an hour before lunch, who do you want to have lunch with? Do you want to have lunch with Rickles? Want to have lunch with Dick Martin? So I sat with these true legends, you know, for lunch, and the comedy's in their DNA. And one great thing about comedians when you're having lunch, Paul, is that you don't bond because of the people that you love. You bond because of the people that you hate together. He's got an incredible mind. An accountant's mind, but when you're doing a show every week, it's always hard to remember your lines. So he had lines placed all over that inn. All of a sudden, there'd be a box of Rice Krispies, and if he just lines, he would turn that box around so he could read what his next line was. So I think I was the most popular director because I knew how to place the lines all over the set that he was upset about.
You know, I heard stories like that about Marlon Brando having done that in some of his movies, and in fact, some cases, putting the lines on somebody else's shirt when he was acting with them and that person was not going to face the camera. Is that what Bob would do on the Newhart show?
Not quite the shirt, but everything else.
One of the other things I mentioned in your career was that you may have done the sketch that got the Smothers Brothers canceled by CBS in, I guess, 1969, was it?
Yeah, it probably was earlier than that, 68, 69. I resent the might have. I was the reason they were thrown off the air.
Oh, definitely, okay.
Now, I love them both. And, in fact, in one of the shows, an Inside Comedy coming up, it's the next week's show is with Steve Martin. And we of course, met on the Smothers Brothers show. And we talked about just how incredible it was to be on that show and that young as we all were. I'm a little older than Steve, and he was one of the writers. But he just described being on the Smothers Brothers show as you felt like you were in at the center of the cultural universe. Everyone was talking about the show. Everyone had seen it on Sunday night. It knocked out, I believe it was Bonanza, one of those big shows. There were only three networks, and we wrote things that were, you couldn't get by censors in those days like you can today. It was called Standards and Practices. They read every line that you said had to be scripted, and they had to okay it. So when I came on, I came right from Second City, and I was, sort of an improvising comedian, and I did these sermons, certainly the traditional in my family. My father had a little synagogue in Winnipeg, and so I knew this stuff very well, and I would improvise a sermon. So they couldn't quite get, I would give them some lines, but I was improvising, and it was going on the air almost live. So when I just started, when you do anything on religion in America, anything, you know you're going to alienate every other religion other than the one that you're dealing with. So I didn't really know that. I was, 26, 25 at the time. And it caused a furor the first time I went on and did it. It just was, we were all laughing, and Steve Martin and Bob Einstein was there and all these guys. And what? Oh, it's great. It was wonderful. And what I didn't know is that Tommy was told by the network that they got the most negative mail. I'm giving you another statistic that it's a badge I wear with honor. Most negative mail in the history, they said, of television. But that's network television.
Wow.
So I went back to New York, and I didn't hear that conversation between Tommy and the network. He said it was, the network always is nervous and all that when I talk to him on the phone from New York. He said, but come back, and we'll do something else because they don't want you to do another sermon. I said, fine. I didn't even say that. He said, come back, we'll do something else. So I came back, and I did another piece from Second City that wasn't improvised. And they had, they'd warned him, don't do a sermon. And the audience responded to what Tommy and I did, and he said, how about doing another one of those sermons? He couldn't wait to just rub the establishment at the Times nose in it. So I did another sermon, and a sort of innocent line. It was, they gave me Jonah as a suggestion, and it was, I say that Jonah was swallowed by a whale, and the New Testament scholars differ here. They literally grabbed the Jews by the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said the Old Testament, I sort of gesticulated with my hands, and that was on the front page of the New York Times that week, announcing that the Smothers Brothers were canceled, the first show ever, a number one show ever canceled off the air, ever. And the truth of it is that, yeah, the sermons were irreverent, and it's very easy to attack religion when you're an establishment organization like CBS. But it was mostly their attitude about the war, that they were sneaking in anti-war messages any way they could around the censors. But this was the most blatant, just sort of in-your-face no to the network that they gave them. So, yes, that was the start of my career in some way.
Paul Harris talking with David Steinberg, the host of Showtime series Inside Comedy, which next Monday is going to have Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin on it. He's done Drew Carey and Martin Mull, Tina Fey and Judd Apatow. And the first episode of this season was with Bob Newhart and also with Louis C.K.
This process of having to be bad,
yeah.
When you're more famous, is it easier to be bad than less famous?
No, because you have pressure. Everything is a zero-sum game, so it's like they're really excited when you get on stage.
They're happy to see you.
Yeah, they go crazy.
Yeah, they go crazy. So they're giving you the benefit of the doubt in a way that you never had it.
You get it for about 30 seconds.
Yes, exactly.
And after that, with stand-up, you just can't do it.
No, it's true.
You get one joke benefit of the doubt, and you can actually burn it completely with that joke.
Yes.
If the joke doesn't work, they're really pissed off now. Because they're like, this guy is probably rich and this guy is wasting my time. And also people love saying what they would love to say. People really enjoy saying, I got to see great comedian X.
Right.
And he was really great. But they love to say, I saw that guy. He sucked. I saw him.
Yes.
He's not that good. That feels good to say. I like saying that about somebody. That's fun to say that.
Louis C.K. talking with David Steinberg on Showtime's Inside Comedy. On the audio there, we hear you agreeing with and laughing at what he's saying.
Yes.
Is that because you know that from your own experience in your early career as a stand-up?
I absolutely do, Paul, and I think that that's the connection that makes the show unique in some way. It's sort of like eavesdropping on two comedians, and it's not very. It's called inside comedy, but I don't like the idea of it being inside comedy. I just like it being that kind of incisive storytelling that someone like Louis C.K. will deal with, sort of. You know, an area of comedy that you just, you know, didn't even know existed. But yeah, what I also like about Inside Comedy, our show, is that it's not about the sort of bittersweet negatives, you know, how hard it is to be on the road, how tough this is. It's about the connections that all these comedians have to one another. And that laughter that you're hearing is literally just a very, very small crew. So... you know, we break a few rules with that.
Did hearing Louis talking about that particular aspect of comedy remind you of any particular incidents in your early career where it did not go well on stage?
Well, the first good review I got, I was at the bitter end in New York in the early 60s before I had done the Smothers Brothers show. And there were six people in the audience for the show, because I couldn't draw anyone. And Richie Pryor was across the street at the Café Agogo playing to maybe 12 people. We were good friends, and we would come and support each other and all that. But there were six people this one night, and I said to the owner of the Bitter End, you know, six people. It's so hard to do stand-up to six people. You know, that's not any... I have more people in my family that are in that audience.
Yeah.
And he said, well, no, you got to learn how to do it. You got out there, you go out there. So when you're a comedian and there are six people in the audience, here's the illogic of stand-up comedians. If there's six people in the audience, you don't hate all the people that haven't come to see you. You hate those six.
Yeah.
Because they're not enough to make a community. And you go out there pissed, and so at that point I realized I probably would have done a very bad show, but I had started a Broadway play that Sidney Poitier directed, and just as I walked on stage, he walked in with, I believe, Diane Carroll, who he was dating at the time, and I saw them come in. So I did, he was a mentor of mine, and who wouldn't, you know, he's the most dynamic, a person you respect most in the world. And so I did a great show, even for these six people. And then I went and had a drink with Sidney afterwards, and he said, David, you've got to keep on doing this. I said, Sidney, you know, I can't do this at six people. And I went home, and the next day, I got a call from, I don't mean to name drop, she was a very close friend of mine, and she lived above me, was Carly Simon. And Carly Simon said, David, did you see the New York Times today? I said, no, I haven't even gotten up yet. And one of those six people was Dan Sullivan, who was a reviewer for the New York Times. And he said, David Steinberg is a cross between Woody Allen, Lenny Bruce. It just went on and on. And the next night, they were lined up around the block, and I had a career. And
wow.
That's how fortuitous everything is.
That's great. Now, you also mentioned being at Second City. And I know, having talked to Robert Klein, that the two of you were not only there at the same time, but butted heads a little bit there in a kind of, alpha male ego battle. That's his side of the story. What's yours?
I won the battle. And it's interesting. Bob is in the in show number 8. And we talk about it, and I don't want to give any away, but it's really interesting to hear what he has to say. But I said to him, Bob, I was there a year before Robert got there, and he was Bob at the time, so forgive me for shortening his name.
It's okay.
But when Bob got there, I had already been there for a year, and I was really established, and I owned Second City, and he was new to it. So he was very very frustrated with all of that. And so just as we started talking about it, I said, well, we go back, Bob. He said, we go back to Second City. And he said, yes, we do. And I said, I must have been so delightful to work with. He said, that you weren't.
You weren't.
But he gives me so much other credit there that I wouldn't even use all of it. He was so respectful and flattering. We're sort of old adversaries that, Jack Benny and George Burns were. We were not really competitive once we got out of there after a while.
Have you gone back to Second City since then to see other performers, and how is that for you?
Well, it's great. Second City still keeps those incredible standards, and it is an incredible family. Yeah, I went back about 3 years ago, and I did a reunion, and I took a suggestion I asked for Old Testament personalities.
Uh-huh.
And of course, one of the smarter people in the audience suggested Jesus, and I said, no, it's too Jewish for me to be doing that. But, yes, I did go back, and the standard is still very high. And Steve Carell is executive producer with me of Inside Comedy, and he was one of the mainstays of Second City years after I was there and Robert Klein was there.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with David Steinberg about his show Inside Comedy on Showtime in its second season now. I actually have a bone to pick with you about the show, although I do enjoy the conversation. A half hour for two big comedy stars is not nearly enough, and Ian watches it too. Don't you feel when it's over like there, it's got to be more?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
So what we want is we want to see more of the stuff, if not on Showtime. Why don't you put more of this stuff online, David?
Well, I do have it online, and I should, because more people ask for it. That is the complaint I do get from everybody, actually, which is such a flattering complaint. But, yes, I do have more stuff, and it is something we're thinking of doing. It's just that it goes that fast, Paul and Ian. It goes that fast because I edit it so within an inch of its life. So to then go to that looseness, well, I was a little reluctant to do that, but I'm because I hear that from everyone, and even Showtime is interested in that, so we will be doing that.
All right, glad to hear that. Here's the last thing, and then I'm going to let you go. But before I get into the last thing here, I got to say, I've had a lot of people who have avoided being on the shows with me through the years. Sometimes they wouldn't get booked at all. Sometimes they'd get booked, and then they'd cancel at the last minute. And that actually coincidentally happened with you. You were supposed to be on a couple weeks ago. The publicist messed up, couldn't do it. Last week, you had something else you had to do on that Friday. Yep. Fine. Last night, I get a call at home from somebody in your publicist's office. David and his wife have just moved into a new house. Can we postpone? And I thought, oh, my God, a guest is actually moving to avoid being on my show. But I'm glad. I hope you're settling into the new house today.
Yes, I am looking at I don't know why this group of people who are in T-shirts and jeans are just, they seem to be I'm in my car, and they're all sitting looking at me through the window of the car. And I think they should be working. Actually, I am. We only have one TV working. Yeah, I did. I'm moving today, and tonight I will sleep in a new house.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to the move after you tell me one story about the Carson show. I saw you on Jimmy Kimmel a couple of weeks ago talking about the night you finally got on after being bumped. Ironic that we're having this conversation, and that's what you talked about there. But I would like to hear a story about when you hosted the show, because you were a guest something like 140 times. But I know in those days, unlike today, no late-night show has a guest host. When you did it, what was that like? How does it work for a guest? Did you get to pick the people who were there? Did you work with the regular staff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Any detail you can give me as a Carsonophile, I would love to hear.
The hostings of the show were always, they're the most fun. Well, I'll tell you a short Elaine Stritch story. First time I hosted, Elaine Stritch was the last guest, and the Tonight Show was 90 minutes at the time. And remember, I'd never hosted before, so you're so nervous about what you're doing. And it all seemed to go well. And, at that time, and still to this day, the coordinators would tell you what the guests' good stories are and what they want to talk about. So you have questions and where their story is over. You have notes on everybody. So I think I had an incredible guest list that night. I think it might have been Simon Garfunkel. It was just amazing. And Elaine Stritch was the last one. And the producer, Rudy Kaye, said to me, you know, when you get to Elaine Stritch, you don't need any notes. Just ask her about her marriage, and she'll go for the full 20 minutes.
Okay.
So I said, Elaine, how are you? She said, I'm fine, David. I'm fine. Things are good. I said, you know, Elaine, tell me about your marriage. And she said, my marriage? I talked about to the producer all afternoon about that. I'm not going to talk about that now. So the next question was, do you know where I'm from? I'm from Winnipeg. I had nothing. That was my first poster. There are many, many more.
And yet you got called back to do it multiple times. And
you know what? When you describe my career just by, you know, all that I did, Paul, I mean, as I say, it's incredible to me. But I always think of my career as being the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, because it was the highlight. He gave me an op-ed page for 20 years or whatever it was, more than that. And I just loved it, actually. And I owe him everything.
Well, I loved having you on the show here today. I hope you can tell that I've been a fan from the psychiatrist sketch all the way forward to today. And I look forward to the next few episodes and hopefully next few seasons of Inside Comedy on Showtime. David Steinberg, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Paul. I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.